Well, greetings again, friends and brethren. I hope this finds everyone doing well. If you need a title for this message today, it is, Who Was That Man? Who was that man? So if you would, just begin by turning to Isaiah chapter 58. Isaiah chapter 58 and verse 1. It says, Cry aloud, spare not, lift up your voice like a trumpet, tell my people their transgressions, and the house of Jacob their sins. So who was that man that did that? Did God send that man? Has that been fulfilled? And if so, who was that man? Notice Isaiah chapter 40. Isaiah chapter 40. Notice verse 1, excuse me, verse 3 of Isaiah chapter 40, it says, The voice of one crying in the wilderness, Prepare the way of the Eternal, make straight in the desert a highway for our God. Did that one voice that of God, he says, voice of one, there, not many, but one, crying in the wilderness, preparing the way of the Lord, Who was that man? Has that been fulfilled? And if so, who was that man? Notice Isaiah chapter 52 now. Isaiah chapter 52. Isaiah chapter 52, beginning in verse 7. How beautiful upon the mountains are the feet of him who brings good news. Or as the old King James, I believe, says, good tidings. Well, who was that him that brought good news? Has that been fulfilled? And if so, who was it? Who was that him that brought good news or good tidings? Let's read on. Who proclaims peace? Who brings glad tidings of good things? Who proclaims salvation? Who says to Zion, your God reigns? Notice in verse 8. There's something that happens at a later time. And it's happening now. It says, Your watchmen, plural, shall lift up their voices. With their voices, they shall sing together. And why do I say this happens at a later time? Well, we'll read on. It says, For they shall see eye to eye when the Lord brings back Zion. So Zion hasn't been brought back yet, not together in one place, but they will be at some point. Notice verse 9. Break forth into joy, sing together, you waste places of Jerusalem. See, today, Jerusalem, or the Church of God, spiritual Jerusalem, is a waste place. For the Eternal has comforted his people, he has redeemed Jerusalem. Okay, that hasn't happened yet, but it will happen. See, it's a time of redemption. Redemption has not happened yet for spiritual or physical Jerusalem, for that matter, but it will. Notice verse 10. Who has made bare his holy arm. What is that arm of the Lord? See, is it literally God's arm? Well, it could be. But if you look at that, I'm in the New King James, but it has a reference here, even in the Old King James, I believe it's a reference where it says made bare. And there in verse 10, it literally means revealed his power. So how did God reveal his power here in the end time? Did he? Did he use someone to proclaim this good news to Jerusalem or to Zion? He brought good tidings? And if so, who was that man? And if you look at the spiritual meaning of this, God's giving us a hint there. His strong arm, that arm that he used to reveal that truth. And notice it goes on. It says, In the eyes of all the nations and all the ends of the earth shall see the salvation of our God. Well, did God send someone in the end time to proclaim these good tidings to all the nations of the earth as a witness and to all nations? If so, who was that man? Notice also what it says in the beginning of chapter 53, verse 1. Who has believed our report? And to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? Well, to whom was it revealed? And who was that arm? If that has happened, who was that man? and to whom had that power been revealed to? See? Who was that strong arm? Who was that man? Notice Ezekiel chapter 3. Ezekiel chapter 3 and verse 17, it says, Son of man, I have made you a watchman for the house of Israel. Therefore hear a word from my mouth and give them warning from me. Well, was that fulfilled in the end time here? And if so, who was that man? It also says essentially the same thing in Ezekiel 33 and verse 7. Ezekiel 33 and verse 7 says, So you, son of man, I have made you a watchman for the house of Israel. Therefore you shall hear a word from my mouth and warn them for me. Now turn back to Ezekiel 2, Ezekiel chapter 2. And notice beginning in verse 3. Ezekiel 2, verse 3, it says, And he said to me, Son of man, I am sending you to the children of Israel, to a rebellious nation that has rebelled against me. They and their fathers have transgressed against me to this very day, for they are impudent and stubborn children. I am sending you to them, and you shall say to them, Thus says the Eternal God, As for them, whether they hear or whether they refuse, for they are a rebellious house, yet they will know that a prophet has been among them. And you, son of man, do not be afraid of them, nor be afraid of their words. Though briars and thorns are with you, and you dwell among scorpions, do not be afraid of their words or dismayed by their looks, though they are a rebellious house. You shall speak my words to them, whether they hear or whether they refuse, for they are rebellious. So did God send a man in the end time who did not have fear to speak out in power and strength to the house and nations of Israel? And if so, who was that man? Who was that man? Notice Malachi, the book of Malachi, chapter 3. Malachi chapter 3 and verse 1, it says, Behold, I send my messenger, and he will prepare the way before me. See, not many ways, just one way. He will prepare the way before me, and the Eternal whom you seek will suddenly come to his temple, even the messenger of the covenant in whom you delight. Behold, he is coming, says the Eternal of hosts. So did God send a man in the end time to prepare the way, that one way to the true God, the one way to worship Jesus Christ? If so, who was that man? Let us over in chapter 4. In chapter 4, beginning in verse 5, it says, Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the day of the great and dreadful day of the Eternal. He will turn the hearts of the fathers to the children, and the hearts of the children to the fathers, lest I come and strike the earth with a curse, which means utter destruction. Has that been fulfilled? And if so, who was that man? You can read a New Testament version of this in Matthew chapter 17 and verse 11. You don't have to turn there, but I'll just read it. Matthew 17:11, Jesus answered and said to them, Indeed, Elijah is coming first and will restore all things. Did that happen? Has that happened? And if so, who was that man? Notice now the book of Micah. Micah chapter 7. Micah chapter 7, beginning in verse 1, it says, Woe is me, for I am like those who gather summer fruits, like those who glean vintage grapes. There is no cluster to eat of the first ripe fruit, which my soul desires. So this is talking, you look at it spiritually, it's about the end time Laodicean condition of God's church, when the first fruit should be ripe, the bride should be prepared and being ready for the marriage to Jesus Christ, but it's not, because the first fruits aren't ready. Notice what verse 2 says. The faithful man has perished from the earth, and there is no one upright among men. They all lie in wait for blood. Every man hunts his brother with a net. That's what's happening in God's church today. But who, in that verse 2, who is that faithful man that perished from the earth? So there had to be at least one faithful man at one time here in the end time. But he's perished now, at least physically. He's dead, awaiting his resurrection. But who was that man? Who was that man? Who was that faithful man? Verse 3 continues on about these, every man that lies in wait for blood, this is talking spiritually, what's happening in God's church, that they may successfully do evil with both hands. The prince asks for gifts, the judge seeks a bribe, and the great man utters his evil desire. So they scheme together. Verse 4, the best of them is like a briar, the most upright is sharper than a thorn hedge. The day of your watchmen and your punishment comes. That's what's coming now upon, rapidly coming upon the end of this Laodicean era. Now shall be their perplexity. See, they've been in their comfort zone now for almost 21 years. So it's very soon now, perplexity is about to come upon these people, whoever they are. But in verse 2, that faithful man who was among us has perished. So now there's no one standing upright among men. And if you understand what that's saying there, it's referring to God's ministry today. But indeed, we should all take heed to that, because God says in His Word that all of our righteousness are as filthy rags. So we have to understand what true righteousness is, or true right doing, which is what righteousness is. Notice Isaiah chapter 22. Isaiah chapter 22. It says, beginning in verse 20, then it shall be in that day, see, it's talking about the end time, in that day I will call my servant Eliakim, the son of Hilkiah. I will clothe him with your robe and strengthen him with your belt. Well, Eliakim, if you looked that up, Eliakim, that word Eliakim means to raise up, or to be strong, or with power. So do we see somebody in the end time that God raised up with strength and power to use to raise up His church in the end time? And if so, who was that man? Notice what it continues to say there. I will clothe him with your robe, verse 21, and strengthen him with your belt. I will commit your responsibility into his hand. He shall be a father to the inhabitants of Jerusalem and to the house of Judah. Well, if you're looking at spiritual Jerusalem, who in the end time said he was our spiritual father? Who was that man? Notice verse 22, the key to the house of David I will lay on his shoulder, and he shall open, and no one shall shut, and he shall shut, and no one shall open. Well, when did this happen? This only happened during the Philadelphia era. And whom did God use to do that? Who was that man? Verse 23, I will fasten him as a peg, or as the old King James says, a nail in a secure place. I'll fasten him as a nail in a sure place, and he will become a glorious throne to his father's house. So who was used in the end time that was steadfast as God revealed truth to him, and he revealed it to us, and he didn't waver, didn't compromise one iota with God's truth. He was a nail in a sure place. As God corrected him and revealed truth to him, he held to it. So who was that man? Notice verse 24 begins to show the importance of who this man was. Verse 24 says, they will hang on him all the glory of his father's house, the offspring and the posterity, all vessels of small quantity, from the cups to all the pitchers. See, looking at that spiritually, understanding what that means, there's a lot of responsibility focusing in on this one man, see? And it all is going to come back to who that man, who was that man. Verse 25 says, in that day, see, in the end time, says the Lord of hosts, the peg that is fastened, or the nail that is fastened in the sure place, will be removed and be cut down and fall, and the burden that was on it will be cut off, for the Lord has spoken. Well, whoever that man was, he's at rest now. He was cut off. He died physically, and the burden's off of him now, see. The burden is off of him, but it is on us, whether we continue in that sure place, that nail, what was taught to us through that nail in a sure place. So the burden is off of that man, and now it's on us. It's all going to come back to that verse 24, and we'll get into this here more in a minute. They will hang on him all the glory of his father's house, the offspring and the posterity, all the vessels of small quantity, from the cups to all the pitchers. So it's all going to come down to this one man. Who was that man? Notice Haggai, the book of Haggai. Haggai chapter 2, the last verse, verse 23. It says, in that day, see, the end time, says the Eternal of Hosts, I will take you, Zerubbabel, my servant, the son of Shealtiel, says the Eternal, and will make you like a signet ring, for I have chosen you, says the Eternal of Hosts. Now, I've discussed before in other messages and articles what that means, that word signet. And it's very interesting how it comes from, it means signature ring, but it comes from a prime root word, number 2856, which means to close up, to seal, to make an end, to mark, to seal up, or to stop. So it's very interesting. You look at the spiritual application of that. Let us turn over to Zechariah now, while we're in this area. Zechariah chapter 4. But again, the emphasis on that, Haggai 2:23, I will take you, Zerubbabel, my servant, and make you a signet, because I've chosen you. Well, who was that man? Has it been fulfilled here in the end time? And if so, who was that man? So Zechariah chapter 4 now, beginning in verse 1, it says, now the angel who talked with me came back and wakened me as a man who was awakened out of sleep. So here's someone who was spiritually asleep, and God's waking some up. And as we go on and see here, something's being revealed that's so plain and so clear. If you just read it for what it says, and there's been much confusion out here over the years about what this represents in this chapter. But God says here in verse 1, he's waking somebody up. And then there's some questions asked and answers given. Very simple, very clear. Verse 2 says, and he said to me, what do you see? And I said, I'm looking, and there's a lampstand of solid gold with a bowl on top of it. And on the stand, seven lamps with seven pipes to the seven lamps. Verse 3, two olive trees are by it, one at the right of the bowl and one at the left. Okay, now from this point, here's the subject, these two olive trees. Remember that. Now go on to verse 4. So I answered and spoke to the angel who talked with me, saying, what are these, my Lord? See, talking about the olive trees. Verse 5, then the angel who talked with me answered and said to me, do you not know what these are? And I said, no, my Lord. So he answered and said to me, now here's the answer to what those two olive trees are. Now he goes on to show at the very end of this chapter, we can skip there momentarily, to verse 14, because it says, these are the two anointed ones who stand beside the Lord of the whole earth. That's referring to the two witnesses. But here's the answer to what those two representatives are, or what they will represent. Here's the answer. Verse 6, he answered and said to me, this is the word of the Lord to Zerubbabel. Okay? Not by might nor power, but by my spirit, says the Eternal of Hosts. What are you, O great mountain? Before Zerubbabel, you shall become a plain, and he shall bring forth the capstone with shouts of grace, grace to it. That is going to happen. It's all going to point back to Zerubbabel. Who was Zerubbabel? Who was that man? And the answer to that question was, this is the word of the Lord to Zerubbabel. That's the key. What was that word of the Lord to Zerubbabel? See, what did God reveal to Zerubbabel? Well, Zerubbabel, if we know who he was, revealed it to us, to God's people. So if we understand what the word of the Lord to Zerubbabel was, we'll understand who the two witnesses are when they come on the scene, because they're going to be saying this, pointing right back to the word of the Lord and to Zerubbabel. Simple as that. All ties back in, just like I read to you previously, to that one man, like I just read in Isaiah. He's going to hang all that glory on that one man. And it goes on to say there, in that knowledge that was revealed to Zerubbabel, that's going to be manifested to the two witnesses, is shown right here in verse 7. Because when they begin to speak to Babylon and all these systems and governments of Babylon, they're all tied together. Of course, there's going to be prophetically one major one that rises up during the tribulation It's already on the rise now. But verse 7 is, who are you, O great mountain? Before Zerubbabel. See, before all this word of the Lord unto Zerubbabel, you shall become a plain. Or other translations say, you'll be flattened out. And he shall bring forth the capstone with shouts of grace, grace to it. Verse 8 says, moreover, the word of the Eternal came to me, saying, the hands of Zerubbabel have laid the foundation of this temple, and his hands shall also finish it. Then you will know that the Eternal of hosts has sent me to you. So does anyone know today who that Zerubbabel was that laid the foundation of the temple and also finished it in the Philadelphia era? That temple was finished. God's word says right there, your hands shall lay the foundation of this temple and your hands shall finish it. Finish what? The temple. Then you'll know the Eternal of hosts has sent me to you. So when this Zerubbabel died, if we know who he was, the church was completed. It was on track at that time. See, it was back on track. Temple was on the way to be being prepared as the bride. But something happened, see, when that nail in the sure place was taken away, when he died. Verse 10 says, for who has despised the day of small things? For these seven rejoiced to see the plumb line in the hands of Zerubbabel. Well, those seven are representative of the seven eras, because the overcomers out of each era are going to be the ones in God's kingdom. See, there'll be no Philadelphians, no Laodiceans, no Ephesians or Thyatirans. It's going to be overcomers from each era that will be in God's kingdom. But they're going to rejoice to see that plumb line in the hands of Zerubbabel. Why is that? Well, I discussed that before, what that plumb line is. It's how God measures. And that's exactly how Zerubbabel measured in the end time. Do we know who that man was? Who was it? So then it goes on to say again in verse 12, it says, I further answered and said to him, what are these two olive branches that drip into the receptacles of the two pipes from which the gold and oil drains? He answered me and said, do you not know what these are? And I said, no, my Lord. He said, these are the two anointed ones who stand beside the Lord of the whole earth. So those olive branches, which are connected to those two trees, those two olive trees, are what it says right there in verse 6. This is the word of the Lord to Zerubbabel. So what was that word of the Lord? See, if we discuss what the silver platter is, or what the all things are, that truth and knowledge, that way of life that was revealed to God's people in the end time, we should understand that clearly. Notice Revelation chapter 3, briefly. Revelation chapter 3, beginning in verse 7, it says, to the angel of the church in Philadelphia. Well, that angel could also be human messenger, has been taught to us over the years. So, who was that angel or human messenger to the church in Philadelphia during that era? Who was that man? See, who was that man? But it says here, continuing, these things says he who is holy, he who is true, he who has the key of David, he who opens and no one shuts, and shuts and no one opens. Well, that's referring to Jesus Christ. But he gave that key. He gave that key to that Philadelphia messenger. And I read that to you in Isaiah just a few minutes ago, about that nail in a sure place, that it ties right into the same man. Who was that man? See, look at verse 8. I know your works. See, I have set before you an open door. No one can shut it, for you have a little strength, have kept my word, and have not denied my name. So Christ gave this man, whoever he was, an open door, only during Philadelphia. Philadelphia is the only era that has been given the open door. Although you see many men today in this Laodicean era, thinking that we're still in Philadelphia, and they think they have an open door to preach the gospel, and they are blinded to the futility of their own works. They can't see how pitiful they are, how pitiful it's become. Preaching the gospel in multiple divisions and hypocrisy. Verse 9 says, indeed, I will make those of the synagogue of Satan who say they are Jews and are not, but lie. Indeed, I will make them come and worship before your feet and to know that I have loved you. And that is going to happen. It was going to happen when that Philadelphia messenger who died, who is resurrected, and becomes God as God as God in God's kingdom. That's all of our potential. Those who have chosen to go the way of the synagogue of Satan will have to worship that God family, see? Because we'll all be part of God's family. But today, we see that what's left of the worldwide church of God has returned to that way, that synagogue of Satan. Now, they are not the synagogue of Satan in and of itself, because we were taught many years ago that the synagogue of Satan are the churches of this world, that system. Now, the worldwide church of God has returned back to that. And so many today, in these various Laodicean groups out there, they're on WCG watch, more or less, watching this and watching that, and seeing how further they're going in apostasy. And they're failing to realize how far they have slipped into apostasy. See? Because God puts us all in the same boat. It's not just the worldwide church of God that's gone off track. See, it's all God's people. So all these groups out here that think that, well, they've become a synagogue of Satan, we haven't. Oh, you better think twice about that. You better think twice about that, because as has been discussed recently through the scriptures, what God says to his people about you worshiping Baals, what is that? Is the Baal from the worldwide church of God any different from the Baals of all the other Laodicean splinters? No. See, they're all gods of their own imagination. So God puts it all in the same category. He wants us to return back to him. There's only one way to do that. See? Only one way to the true God. So, in essence, all of God's people that have fallen away in this end time, in this Laodicean era, are falling back into that synagogue of Satan. They just don't realize it yet. And when they do and wake up, they're going to go, oh my. And I thought I was worshiping the true Jesus Christ, because I was still doing the holy days and doing the Sabbath and, you know, keeping the Sabbath strictly and trying to keep it letter of the law, so to speak. Well, Christ says, I don't know you. And why does he say that? Because they haven't been holding fast to all things. See, there's only one way that was revealed in the end time to the true God. And God's people, for the most part, yeah, the ministry, but also the members have departed from that way. Notice Matthew 24. But the question in, again here, on Revelation 3, verse 7, the angel of the church in Philadelphia, that messenger, who was that man? Who was it? Do you know? Notice Matthew 24. This is a pivotal verse. It's still being used by many today that are attempting to preach the gospel to the world. Matthew 24 and verse 14, it says, and this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world as a witness to all the nations. Then the end will come. It doesn't say immediately, see? People think, well, if the gospel was preached, why isn't the end here? Well, there's a time of testing that has to take place first to see if anyone was going to hold fast those truths that God gave us. But if this has been done, if it has been fulfilled, then who was that man that fulfilled it? Who was that man that fulfilled this, Matthew 24, verse 14? Well, as discussed earlier there in Isaiah 22 again about Eliakim, that nail in a sure place, God said he made it, put it in front of all the nations. So it's fulfilled prophecy. It is fulfilled prophecy. But who fulfilled it? Well, there's only one man that has fulfilled all of these things that I've discussed. That Philadelphia messenger. He was also an apostle of Jesus Christ. He was the end time Elijah. He was the Ezekiel watchman to the house and nations of Israel. He was the end time Zerubbabel. He was that nail in a sure place. He was the strong arm of the Lord. Spiritually speaking, he wasn't literally the arm of God, but he was that representative of the arm of the Lord, a strong arm. And all you had to do is turn that two words around, and you could see who it was. It was Armstrong, Mr. Herbert W. Armstrong. He's the only one who could have fulfilled this. And he indeed did fulfill it. And the history and the proof is there as a witness to all of us that are in God's church, and indeed a witness to all the nations of the earth, and to indeed many people on the earth. But we have to remember that gospel went out as a witness only, not to try to save everyone. It's not the time for mankind to be saved yet. God's only called a few to be teachers, to become teachers. So when Christ does return to set up his kingdom, he'll have that infrastructure set up, but he can begin to set his hand to save the rest of mankind, because they're just not ready yet. So that man, who was that man? Through all these scriptures that I covered, is Herbert W. Armstrong. And I've only touched on maybe a dozen scriptures or so here, but there's a lot more. There are many, many scriptures that put importance on what God does through one man in the end time. So does our salvation then rest on that one man? No, not on the man physically, not on the physical man, it does not. But on what God himself did through that man. See, what he revealed to us through him. That one voice crying in the wilderness. The one who prepared the way. See, well, in that sense, yes, it does. Our salvation most definitely does rest on what God did through him. Absolutely, because all that truth came through him and was restored through him. Now notice Revelation chapter 11. Revelation chapter 11. Beginning in verse 1, it says, "Then I was given a reed, like a measuring rod, and the angel stood, saying, Rise and measure the temple of God." See, God's church. Measure the temple of God, the altar, and those who worship there. So, the altar represents the ministry, and those who worship there are the members. So that includes everyone in God's church. That did happen. Because someone had to rise up after he died from total heart failure and spent the last 7 to 9 years of his life setting the church back on track using that plumb line of Zerubbabel, see, that God placed in his hands, that way that God measures, and the church was set back on track. And that did happen. Notice verse 2. "But leave out the court, which is outside the temple." See, they're not being measured yet. They're not being measured yet, those on the outside. "And do not measure it, for it has been given to the Gentiles, and they will tread the holy city underfoot for 42 months. Well, that's going to happen literally with the physical Jerusalem, but also with spiritual Jerusalem that's going to be caught in the tribulation. Now notice verse 3. "I will give power to my two witnesses." It doesn't say there, "I'm going to raise up two men at that time and make them my two witnesses." The implication here is that they're already on the scene. They're already witnessing. And what are they witnessing for? See, what is that message? What are they witnessing for? We're the witnessing for that one witness that God sent in the end time. That Matthew 24, verse 14, "I'll preach the gospel to all nations as a witness." See, so these two witnesses are going to witness for that witness. And they're going to point right back to verse 1 and verse 2. What? Is that simple? That's right. Verse 1, they're going to remind God's people that his temple had been measured and it was set back on track. See, they're going to remind God's people that verse 1 is fulfilled. I'm just summarizing this now because it's putting it in the most simple terms. That God sent a man to fulfill many, many offices and roles and to reveal truth through him to God's people to show the way to salvation. So these two men are going to be pointing back to verse 1 as part of their testimony, but they're also going to be doing verse 2 because then the warning will begin to go out to all mankind when they're given that power to repent. And this is the way. But it also goes to God's people first and foremost because they're the ones in danger of losing it all forever. So it says again in verse 3, "I will give power to my two witnesses." See, so they're probably on the scene sometime before this time. But then at the beginning of the tribulation, or just a couple of days before actually, they're given power at that time. My two witnesses, and they will prophesy 1,260 days, clothed in sackcloth, meaning they're humble. Verse 4, let's tie that back into Zechariah. These are the two olive trees. Wow, and the two lampstands standing before the God of the earth. So, it should be very clear, in a general sense, what these two men are going to be saying. It's going to point right back to the Philadelphia messenger, to the apostle, that end time Elijah, that Ezekiel watchman, that end time Zerubbabel, that nail in a sure place, that strong arm of the Lord that came along among mankind in the end time and was used to raise up a church, and God used him to raise up a mighty worldwide witnessing work. And it still indeed stands today as a witness to all mankind and above all a witness to all of God's people who should know better, who should know better than what they're doing today. So, I hope these few scriptures have helped to clarify who was that man. It was none other than Herbert W. Armstrong, God's end-time apostle. That'll conclude this message. Until next time, I love you all. Take care.